RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We're at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. And with me, as usual, is Tanner. Hi, Tanner.
Hey, how's it going? Can you believe that you've done 126 of these after today?
As a 41, soon-to-be 42-year-old man here shortly, it's an embarrassment of riches to have a career, a wife, a daughter, and meaningful hobbies, and also to have run 126 games in the last 10 years, or to have at least played in.
Well, I see I'm not really involved in your embarrassment of riches. I thought you'd say like a great like one-on-one player as well.
Well, you're part of the many, many games.
Okay, I guess I'll go after your wife and daughter.
I genuinely was telling Susan just the other day that it feels really nice because for a couple of years there during the pandemic when Mike and Brian kind of lost interest and, you know, Chris and Nathan and I couldn't really get together. Nathan has a child now, by the way. Congrats, Nathan. I think you still listen. Everyone just got really busy. So for a couple of years there, it really felt like my hobby was buying books instead of role play, instead of playing the game.
So yeah, and that's one of the nice things about this one-on-one stuff that we've been doing. I know we said it very early on, but it's just so much easier to just be like to find two people who have some free time on a weekend rather than five plus kids plus other commitments and stuff like that. So
absolutely. Hopefully that gets better when Margo gets bored with me. Hopefully this gets easier, but I'm also enjoying Margo not being bored with me while she's still 11.
Yep.
So I ran a game for you in the vein of our recent podcasts episodes. We've been trying to figure out mysteries, and I ran a mystery for you without even getting into the show notes. High level, what'd you think? Like 1 to 10.
I was thinking about this the other day, and like 4 or 5 days after we played together, because we played this one pretty recently, I'm like, is this the best game Dusty has ever run? For me, at least, I think it's certainly up there. So I would give this a strong 9 out of 10, a solid A.
I will take that.
Yeah.
Because I felt great about it when we hung up.
Yeah, I did too. It was, we'll get into it, but you did a lot of really good adaptation of an adventure that maybe wasn't ideal, but you took all the good bits and you made it work for our tastes, and it was awesome.
Yeah, let me monologue about what the adventure is for a second. Let me just do an info dump. So audience, strap in for an info dump. So I ran The Veiled Society. It's an adventure by David Zeb Cook. He wrote it for BX. So it's a great adventure in terms of it was like the third urban adventure ever. The first one for BX. It was one of the first murder mystery, if not maybe, I think maybe the first murder mystery module, certainly the first for BX. It takes place in Specularum, which is a key city in the Duchy of Karamaikos, which is in Mystara, or the known world. So that's fun. I've always been interested in Mystara ever since playing the arcade game as a kid. So it was neat to actually run a game in Mystara. But having said that, the module is, no offense, David Zeb Cook, who is so much better at everything to do with RPGs than me. It's rudimentary, right? It's the early days of module writing. So I did do some adaptation, somewhat because the organization, the adventure, left something to be desired. I mean, this is an era where people would just read the adventure cover to cover and then kind of get to know it and then run it. And I don't read modules that way. So part of my revision was that, but part of my revision is just adapting it to my own style. And I turned it into a dungeon crawl. And I had a lot of fun turning it into a dungeon crawl. So I turned this, you know, 16-page, 3-column, 8-point, actually I think it's even smaller than that, like 7-point, it's a tiny font adventure into a 12-page, double-columned, much larger font adventure. So I shortened it quite a bit. I removed some stuff, made it a dungeon crawl, so it worked with kind of the hex dungeon format that we've been exploring, and that is what I ran. So Tanner, I ran this game less like an episode of CSI in terms of mysteries, where you investigate things that have already happened. And I ran it more like Magnum PI, where there's, you know, the opening fight at the beginning of the show, the fight before the commercial break, and then, you know, the gunfight at the end where the bad guys die and he solves the mystery like through these fights. So it was kind of a fighting mystery. Did you enjoy that?
I definitely did. I think it took me a little bit to get into the mindset of this is a mystery and not just like a regular kind of D&D game. And you did have to prod me a little bit about that. But once we got going, like, I think that that really suits this format of old school gaming pretty well. Because we played in Basic Fantasy RPG, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it is pretty much a clone of BX D&D, right? Kind of rewritten.
Not quite a clone. In fact, Chris Gonerman, the creator, is a little salty about the fact that his retro clone status was revoked in a Wikipedia article years ago because it has ascending armor class. It separates race and class. But aside from that, it's basically
BX. It's compatible. Yeah. Yes. And I really like that you took this. You didn't run the Veiled Society for me. You ran like the Veiled Society remastered. You took it and you made a new structure, kind of like how video games do a lot of the time, where they take something that had some really awesome ideas, doesn't hold up super well for the modern day, maybe. And they made it more sophisticated, prettied it up, re-released it, and made it into something that is more suited to today's tastes. And I think that, you know, if we consider me and our games recently today's tastes, like, you remastered this for our tastes, and I think that that is one of the awesome strengths of it.
I take that. I will take that feedback. Was it cheating of me to take a game that's basically about killing monsters, it's about fighting, and turn it into a fighting mystery? Was going the Magnum PI route kind of a cheat on the whole mystery challenge we set for ourselves?
No, I don't think so. I mean, so mysteries are about getting clues, right? And sometimes, like, inspecting a crime scene as a clue, we did a little bit of that. Sometimes talking to the right person, getting the right information from an expert is getting a clue. We did that in our Detroit Trail of Cthulhu game. And sometimes beating up a guy, a clearly evil cultist wearing a nasty hood and shaking him down for information is getting a clue, right? Like, I think that certain things, like, yeah, this did not resemble Agatha Christie, right? Really, in any way. But I don't think that that's cheating. It's just a different, you know, it's a little bit more pulpy, you know, punch the guys in the face and get the info that way kind of mystery. And it, I think that suits the game we played, like the system we played, really, really well.
And to me, back to Motor City Greens and Blues, the game that you ran for me, where we had the one combat at the very end, it just seemed out of place. So for this, having a few combats throughout, I was trying to mix it up and take what we had learned from Trail of Cthulhu.
Yeah, and it helps with the setting too, right? This is like a fantasy urban adventure where I'm beating up cultists and trying to solve a murder versus like a more grounded, pretty realistic, like 70s cop setting where like it would be weird if you got in three gunfights in one session, you know, like that would change the session a lot more than this did, right?
Oh, and I would go back, I would fix the other one differently. I just wouldn't have combat at all.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what we arrived at. So I like this. I think it was a good, it felt like a really good mix of finding something out and like dungeon crawling, right? Because I think in good dungeon crawls you're making like pretty informed decisions. Like you never want a dungeon crawl where there's an identical left and right path and it's just like, oh, I guess I go down the right path, who cares? Like, I had info, I knew kind of where things led. I'm like, I should go talk to this guy, I should go into this building, try and get this from this guy. Like, I was making, like all true great dungeon crawls, I like had a goal for myself and I was exploring the space to achieve that goal, right? And it just sort of happened to be structured like a dungeon. And I think that's something that good mysteries have in common as well.
So I committed the cardinal sin of GMing. I had a GM PC. Was that terrible or did it work out?
No, it worked really well. And you kind of, you gave me a heads up beforehand. So for those who don't know, I think the reason that this is such a cardinal sin is that there are so many ways it could go wrong, right? Like if you have an NPC that you as the GM are playing along with a party, and it's making decisions for them and it's fighting in combat with them, it very quickly can become the main character of their story, right? When the players should be the main characters of their story. And I did that back when I was a teenager, when we were playing 3.5 and stuff. Like, it was hard to resist, but you see so much advice against it. But you gave me some good heads up. You said, okay, number one, the purpose of this GMPC is to get you into this setting so I don't have to lore dump on you, and you can ask this guide character, you know, what's going on. And I said, okay, cool. And you said, number two, this character will not participate in combat and will not help you in combat, and in fact might flee from combat. And I said, okay, cool. And then you said, number three, tell me who this guy is so we can make it work with your character. And I think that all three of those things were like super, super key to making this work, right?
Should we talk? So I don't want to spoil the adventure too much, but I think we probably will a little bit. But we could talk about this GMPC Roland, who does not appear in the adventure.
No,
all we want. Do you want to talk about Roland, or should I?
Yeah. So I mean, I was playing as Fife again, my elven warrior, right? So in old school terms, I was sort of a mix between a spellcaster and a fighter type, or a magic user type and a fighter. And when I played him before, I played him very mercenary, right? Like, he's there, like, he may have some affection for elves and stuff like that, but he's really there to get paid and move on with his life. So when we made Roland, who we decided was a Tim Curry butler from Clue or something, Roland was awesome, because I think it helped that you got really into like one character who would recur pretty much every scene or every other scene, and you really nailed it.
I love playing Roland. I love the novels. I don't think we've ever discussed this. The P.G. Wodehouse novels, Jeeves, My Man Jeeves, Right Ho Jeeves, like all these novels, I love them. There's a bunch of great audiobook versions. Even though they're really hard to find, Hugh Lowry and Stephen Fry did a show on BBC that was Jeeves. And I that show is how I found out about the Jeeves character and why I started reading the books. I love Jeeves. So I think you said Tim Curry Butler, and I was like, I'm playing Stephen Fry's Jeeves.
Well, I was born in the 20th century, so I was thinking like Ask Jeeves is like what I know. I don't really know about these ancient characters you're talking about. Sorry.
Oh, the age gap.
But yeah, no, Jeeves, Roland was awesome. He helped me through. He was there when I'm like, okay, who are the Vorloi again? Or I'd be like, do the Tornescu, do they care about this or that? Or do they have a reputation for this? And that's all stuff that like, you either have to give me a handout at the beginning of the session that's 12-point font of a one-page lore dump that I do, but like, we made it into an interactive role-playing thing that was back and forth. That was a lot of fun for both of us instead.
It was. So what was the most fun aspect of this adventure?
I really liked role-playing with Roland and Fife. And I really liked feeling like I had the power to solve this mystery. Like I had the agency to solve this mystery kind of in my own way. I love that the kind of climax of it, or maybe right before the climax, was me stealing an item from one of the injured parties to prove to the perpetrators that I was one of them, right? And I was in on it. And that wasn't, you know, part of the adventure or anything, right?
No, in no way, shape, or form. Yeah, making this a dungeon crawl and giving you the ability to like move around it as a dungeon crawl. Yeah, that solution was completely out of left field. The whole interaction you had with the Tornescus and the Signet Ring, way out of left field. A lot of it was, and it was super fun to play off of for me.
Yeah, it was a good mix of exploration, investigation, combat, and role playing. I mean, we had it all. So that was my favorite aspect of the session.
What was the least fun aspect?
I don't think it's a very good mystery. I don't think it's a bad mystery. It's a very straightforward mystery. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but like, it's very much like you are led to believe one thing and then you find out information that it was another thing, and that was pretty much it. Unless I don't want to sound reductive, but am I missing anything super big without spoiling it?
This is interesting feedback, and this show is all about taking feedback gracefully, and I take your feedback, but I'm going to challenge you on it. In the moment, as we went to hang up that night, which was just, by the way, a week ago today, you said, boy, this had like three different twists. At first I thought this, and then I thought, no, this, and then I thought this, and then it was, you know, the first thing that I thought again. So at the time you indicated that it had a few twists, but now you're saying it's straightforward. I think it is very straightforward. And I like that, because I think PCs can kind of tie themselves up in knots looking for wheels within wheels.
For sure.
So I liked it being a little bit straightforward. I would hate to introduce too many more red herrings when there was already the signet ring red herring. I think you perceive it as straightforward because you saw through the signet ring red herring like instantly.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm more commenting and more thinking the fact that there were red herrings that I immediately identified as red herrings. And I was like, this is not even worth exploring down. So I, you know, and every group is different. Every player is different. And it's not to say that you're like dumb if you think that that's a valid, you know, path to go down. But yeah, I guess I'll say that it felt straightforward for a mystery. I'll say like there were a couple of twists, but really nothing that was like mind blowing or super revelatory or changed how I thought of the whole, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen, I think we talked about this, either Knives Out or Glass Onion, where there are a couple points in there, like good Agatha Christie stories, where you find a piece of information that recontextualizes everything that you've seen before and changes what you think of that. And there was nothing like that in this, which is fine. It felt like a really good, like, straightforward mystery. And that's a thumbs up for me. But yeah, I think if you're going into this looking for like the greatest, most complex mystery ever told, I don't think you're going to find that in the Veiled Society.
Yeah, there was no M. Night Shyamalan. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm so sorry, everyone. There's no M. Night moment where all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this incredible twist and everything's different now. Yeah, that's definitely not here. And before I submit this next statement, Tanner, have you had a chance to review the original Veiled Society yet?
Yeah, I browsed through it. I flipped through it. I didn't read it cover to cover, but I did flip through it.
Did you recognize it as the adventure that I ran for you?
Bits and pieces. I think you took like the major bullet points of it and remixed it, like I said, into your own layout and stuff. But yeah, I think it's definitely recognizably still that same adventure. Do you not think so?
No, I do. It was really important to me that you feel like I had run the classic module, the Veiled Society, for you. So there was a ton that I cut. Like there's this whole part at the beginning where you're involved in this parade and this thing happens and you witness it and then people hand you gold and that happens whether you want it to or not. And like there's all this railroady stuff that happens to you whether you want it to or not. And I'm like, I'm cutting all this railroad stuff. I'm starting when you're in the lady's cellar who heard the quote unquote demons. Like I'm starting there where it really felt to me like the Final Fantasy first 8 hours tutorial was over and the gameplay was starting.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to railroad, like don't waste everybody's time at the table. Just say, we've said this before, start your session at the entrance to the dungeon. Right. And this is the exact same piece of advice, just kind of reframed.
So that was the biggest cut. Other than that, though, like I was literally taking all the content directly from the module and just putting it in hexes to happen in that discrete location instead of happening as a point crawl or happening as events. But I really wanted this to feel like the Veiled Society to you.
I had a hard time wrapping my head around how much work this was for you. Was this more work than writing a mystery from scratch? If you were to like write a mystery of this sort of complexity level and content from scratch, would you have spent more time and energy on doing that versus, you know, taking this 40-page adventure and remixing it and rewriting it and copying it and OCRing it and fixing the spelling mistakes and all that? Like, I guess number one, would that be more work? And two, would that be more fun for you?
it wasn't more work. It was important to me to have a roadmap to follow, because I'd run an adventure for you before, the Columbo adventure that we talked about that I ran using Books and Bullets. And that one went so badly, but so much of it was the same. Like the NPC prep was the same, having lines for them to say, like I had done that work. I had done a lot of prep. I'd made my own mystery. But I just didn't do a great job because I didn't understand how to structure a mystery yet. All the same role-playing stuff, the same role-playing skills, like so much of it was the same. It was like a 2% difference, it feels like to me, that made a 60% difference in how the game came across. So even though it was more work or a lot of work to adapt it, I wanted to do that work because I wanted to start with an existing mystery module that someone had written. I knew I wanted it to be dungeony. So mm-hmm. I started with, you know, a very early one. I knew I turned it into a dungeon crawl because we've gotten kind of good at that because I wanted to have some crutches to lean on. And it was a lot of work, Tanner, but I would do it again to have a solid mystery to lean on.
If we ever need another series of games that we should do, once we get over this dungeon crawling and this mystery, it would be fun if we took turns remastering all the B adventures for each other. Like, can we do Keep on the Borderlands in this 14 hex type game? Oh. Like, can we do Against the Giants? Can we do, I mean, like Isle of Dread might be doable, you know, that's a hex crawl, right? Like, it'd be kind of fun to remix these old adventures. I think a lot of them would be too much scope for one session, like we kind of prefer to do, but I don't know.
Keeping the Borderlands, it's conceivable if we do two sets of 14 hexes, one for the keep and one for the Caves of Chaos.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be a ton of scope to slot into a 14 room hex.
Yeah, that'd be a lot, I guess. So was there anything about this that was like not fun for you?
The prep was a lot of work, but I enjoyed the prep work. I really had a lot of confidence. Like this is a good module. I complained about the railroady bits, right? Probably someone's listening going, does this guy think he's better than Dave, than Zeb Cook? And the answer is hell no, I don't think that. Zeb Cook is so much better than me. But I am a technical writer, and I think so much of prep is individual. Like, I would never dare to tell you, Tanner, how to prepare for public speaking because it's individual, right? We all know it's individual. You use note cards. I don't use note cards. You do this. I do that. You memorize. Whatever. You picture people in their underwear. I imagine. Whatever. Like, everyone has their individual tricks because it's so stressful and difficult that it has to be individual. I think the same thing's true of GMing. So the work that I did was to adapt it to my own GMing style and learning style.
Yeah, you're not better than Zeb Cook at maybe writing a B6 adventure, but you are better than Zeb Cook at writing an adventure for your group, right?
Yeah, and I think we all are, and we should feel free to remix stuff. But no, I had a ton of confidence going in, man, that this would be good right from the beginning, right from when I read the module and was like, oh, I can work with this. So I enjoyed every part of it.
Isn't it nice when you're right about that once in a while, about like, oh, this is going to be good, and then it's good. It's such a nice treat, right?
With the Columbo one, I was like, ooh, you know, I'm going to do my best. It's a simple system. It's a simple mystery structure. These keys interconnect. Like, but I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and it didn't go great. And this one, I was sure how it was going to go, and it went awesome.
I remember you mentioning that there were some like confusing naming schemes in the adventure as written, right?
Yeah. At one point, they refer to Lucia, the character who's murdered. She's clearly Lucia Vorloi, like when you read the whole module. But I was confused on my first like read through. I had to read through this thing a couple times because at one point they refer to her as Lucia Fortunatu. And Fortunatu is her father's first name. So it's like that was confusing. There's Anton Radu and Antonito Radu, and the Radus are mentioned differently each time. You find out that, boy, we are getting spoilers, Antonito kind of ordered the murder, and the two guys that did it, he sends them back to bury the body, and sure enough, you find two guys burying the body, but you beat those guys in combat, but then in the adventure, the two guys who actually murdered her are elsewhere, like one's in a bar, and one's about to be killed by the Veil Society for betrayal or whatever. It's like,
it needs some cleanup.
Weren't those the same two guys? Yeah, it needed cleanup all over the place.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I mean, I think that overall, like I said, this was a big win, I think, for both of us, especially for you. I mean, it was a great, selfishly, it was a really great session to play in. And I think that you really nailed this remaster of the Veiled Society.
And adapting Adventure to the way I wanted to run it and the way I felt confident running it, it's a huge confidence boost. Like adapt your adventures.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we do lessons learned?
Yeah, let's hit it.
So make any adventure you run your own. I've talked about this several times. I just talked about it. I needed to read the Veiled Society over and over again and then, frankly, revise it and then comb through it again to make sure I understood it. So I really wanted to make this good, and adapting it was how I did that. So feel free to make adventures, even modules, your own.
Mm-hmm. And then lesson learned number two, if your mystery is going to have combat, have more than one to keep the tone consistent, right? That's kind of something we learned from my Detroit game. It felt weird that it was this intellectual kind of heady mystery, and then there was a shootout at the end that wasn't good. Like, sprinkle, if you're going to balance a tone, you kind of got to sprinkle it and mix it up throughout the whole length of the adventure. You know, keep the tone consistent and honor, you know, what your genre is.
And finally, GMPCs aren't a sin. I think all things are good in moderation. There's no rule is unbreakable. Yep. So don't be afraid to break those rules.
Yeah. And I think that I think of this way a lot too, about splitting the party. People give blanket statement advice, and I think it's really valuable to understand why that advice is what it is. Like, why GMPCs are bad, so that when you do need to make that sin and include one, you're doing it the right way.
Absolutely. Well, I loved this adventure. I loved prepping it. I loved running it. Thank you for playing in it. And all of you at home, thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.